This is the Real Estate Addicts podcast, episode 92, with your host, Ray Herto, RH Investment Group.
Dan Rubin, RH Investment Group.
Mark Savatsky, Choose Boston.
And today, joining us in the studio, we have
Eric Dorosky, Zanzibar Capital.
And Nitzan Mokadi, Zanzibar Capital. All right.
What nationality is Nitzan?
I'm Israeli, so nice. I was born there, but Boston's my home. So
cool.
Nice.
How long were you there for? So I was there till I was 4 and moved here right after then and haven't left since. So
do you go to school in Boston?
I did. So I went to school in the Brookline area, and then this actually ties together. So both of us went to Northeastern.
Oh, yeah.
So,
all right. Go Huskies. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's actually where we came up with the idea.
Really? So,
and Zanzibar is what? So Zanzibar is basically one of the nicest beach areas in the world, but you wouldn't think of that. If you think of, okay, what's the best beach in the world? That's not what you'd come up with. And so it's really a hidden gem, and that's kind of how we like to find properties. So
have you been to Zanzibar?
Not yet, but after a few more deals, hopefully.
Nice.
Where is that?
It's right off the coast of Tanzania in Africa.
Oh,
yep.
Nice.
What is the best beach in the world?
Zanzibar. Absolutely.
No, that's the, like, you know, underrated best beach.
I got an email today for somebody selling like some $4 million place out in Newton. And I thought to myself, for $4 million, could I just buy an island? So then I just started looking up islands to buy. And I think you can. I think you can buy stuff super cheap.
Dan, Ray needs more to do.
We need to invest in islands and go into tourism is what I'm saying.
I would think that like some places in Bali would be probably pretty spectacular.
Mm. Long flight, though. I'm not good with long flights.
No, it's very, very long. So
let's start with this. So basically, we're sitting in the dining hall at Northeastern and thinking, okay, how do we
make
money?
Are you eating the delicious warm chocolate chip cookies that they make?
Oh, they phased that out in our year. So
shut up.
Yeah. So those were not in the dining hall we were at. That was just in the other dining halls closer to the freshman quad.
Did they have the corn cookies? Still, those were pretty good.
Chocolate chip cookies. You know what? Those were good.
Have those?
I remember the cookies. I don't remember that other stuff. I remember just taking lots of food from the food hall and bringing it back to my dorm. So
in the to-go cups.
Yes.
And in this one, they also had the sushi, and there was some questionable sushi.
We definitely didn't have sushi.
Well, sometimes a fried chicken sushi stuck in just a roll. No explanation, nothing else. Maybe some mayo in it just to bring it all together.
So we were sitting there and eating the gourmet food and thinking, how do we make money while we're in classes? And so each of us played around on the stock market a little bit and noticed that was not very predictable. And long story short, we just decided, okay, what if we were to go into real estate? And neither of our families have any sort of real estate background. So it was really an untouched frontier for us. And so the first things that we looked at were, where could we afford something from a sticker price perspective? And so we landed on Cleveland, Ohio.
No, well, what year was this? Sorry.
Detroit was a little too cheap, so You never pick the cheapest one. You pick the second cheapest one.
Yeah. What year was this?
So this was 2018. And
got it.
Eventually, we ran some numbers. So for background, I studied mechanical engineering with a minor in economics.
I did math and econ, which is actually how we met. We met on a study abroad that Northeastern calls a dialogue in the Dominican Republic, studying economics.
Studying.
Oh, lots of studying.
Lots of studying. But after the studying, we ran a little bit of just analysis on where we can get good rents for the specific sticker price, and Cleveland looked very good. And so we would fly out there on weekends. We did 12 or so open houses a day, and eventually we picked up a few properties. Two were a single family, and one was a duplex.
And how'd you fund these?
So a mix of co-op money, internship money that we had, and some success in the stock market from before.
I mean, for reference, the duplex was $27,000.
Got it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cheap. Very,
were
very
you
cheap.
Paying cash or were you getting loans on these guys?
So these were cash.
Okay.
And
you can't get a mortgage that small. So I don't know if it's 4%, 5%, but you're capped with the amount of fees you can charge percent-wise on a mortgage. And $27,000 mortgage, what? You can charge, you know, a couple hundred bucks, thousand bucks.
That's like an auto loan. You might as well just get an auto loan.
We should have thought about that. But instead, we funded in cash, and we're sitting there, and we learned a lot. We made absolutely no money on the first one. We did a little better on the second two. But
were these holds or were these flips?
So they were flips, but we rented them out, and we collected some income from them. So it was basically our mini MBA, as I like to call it.
A second co-op, if you will.
Exactly. In between co-ops, I should say.
So how long did you own those for?
Two-ish
years on the shortest one. A couple of the single families we actually kept until last year, they were just, they're running smooth. It seemed like at the time more of a headache to sell it than just keep renting. And eventually we determined, even if it takes us an hour or two here a week, this is not our growth plan. This is not a market we're going to buy anything more in. So it's just time to cut the cord and call it a day.
How was managing property out of state?
Difficult, especially because we didn't have, you know, the experience of doing it in state. So number one, we were learning how to deal with properties. And number two, it was the fact that basically name a better deal for a contractor than out-of-state owners who have no idea what they're doing.
And on top of that, we have four units at our peak there. So we don't have any good kind of scale.
Yeah.
There's, you know, not much to do is that you're not going to get the most sophisticated management in place there. You're not going to get, you know, a sophisticated maintenance tech. It's really, it's almost, I think in the end we had a handyman manage it, which was great. He got along with the tenants. He could fix the small things. And it was actually useful to him. I mean, he was just a handyman business that picked up the checks as a bonus.
There's always a low watermark for investors. And I feel like ideally that low watermark continues to go up throughout your career. I like to think of it as like, how little will I get out of bed for?
Yeah.
I'm not flying to Ohio or Cleveland for 20. How much could you make on a $27,000 property as far as rent?
What do we have for both units? About 1500 at the time. So
combined, not
yeah.
I mean, how much is your airfare just to get there and back?
JetBlue.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Yeah.
Amazing. It was, we had some flights that were $34 a piece.
And, really? Yeah.
So it was really cheap. And that's what we did on the weekends. But
well, we went there 3-4 collective times. You're making it sound like we went there every other week.
I mean, $1,500 a month on a $27,000 property is pretty
it's
good
well
return.
Exactly. Oh, it's no crazy debt. Yield.
That is way better than I thought
and
you'd say.
For
I,
reference,
I
we sold that
some
one.
Of that, but
what's that?
We sold that one for about $750
a unit.
So
they sold it for
$70. It's duplex.
Yeah. Right? Duplex, two units. One unit was at, let's just say $700-ish. The other one was at $900. It was a three bed below, two bed on top.
I guess your cost of capital is pretty close to zero at a $27,000 acquisition.
Exactly.
But the killer part is it still costs the same amount to replace a roof.
Yeah.
So roof goes, maybe it's a little cheaper there with labor, but still $8,000, replace a roof. That's a full year of cash flow.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was one of the lessons we learned pretty early on that—
You have high maintenance costs on those buildings?
It really wasn't the, you know, the small R&M, but it was the big items that, you know, when the water heater goes, when the roof goes, you can wipe out a whole year of cash flow. Yeah. And, you know, unless you really get a good scale there, it doesn't add up.
I got to imagine vacancy rates are pretty high on a property that costs $27,000. Like, to me, I'm seeing this like a deserted block of houses
like
that should be condemned. But
like
a couple
C-class, D-class?
So Cleveland had something in play that they would tear down vacant homes to decrease housing stock. So that's the exact opposite we're dealing with in the city of Austin.
Yeah.
Although the city of Austin did do it in the 70s.
Yeah.
So that's exactly that. And I forget the name. Do you remember the name of that program?
Oh, no, I don't. And I'd like to forget it
and
most likely.
They would charge you. You could pick up a lot if it was adjacent to your house for something like $500 plus the legal filing fee, which was like $37.
Same as Boston in the 70s.
Yeah.
At $1.
Did they put deed restrictions on those lots?
Yeah, Dan knows.
No, they didn't. Well, if you think about it, replacement cost of a building there is probably $250,000. So you're looking at buildings selling for a tenth replacement cost.
Yeah.
There's really no incentive to build. And if you built a new house there, I mean, there were some people that were selling $400,000, $500,000 townhouses, and they were selling. So it was within a mile of our place. So there was some intricacies of the market. But, you know, we were out of state. We didn't really know Cleveland. If we were from there, maybe it'd be a scalable thing because we'd know all the pockets, all the neighborhoods, but it's tough.
We wanted to stop and acknowledge our sponsor, First Boston Capital Partners. Dave Grossman and his team do a fantastic job. So if you need financing to build a building, we highly recommend reaching out to them. They're super flexible, fast, really good group to work with. Can't say enough. So First Boston Capital Partners, you can reach out to us for an introduction and I'll be happy to put you in touch.
Well, let's not dwell on Cleveland too much more.
Because I know.
Sure,
should
we go to
Well, I was
let's
gonna
go
say,
to the sexy stuff.
I was going to say, I know that the numbers get bigger pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So let's give us the cliff notes.
Yeah, so you learned some stuff in Cleveland.
Learned a lot. And thankfully, it was our money. And so really, that was the best way to learn. And cheaper than tuition at most places. But in about, I want to say, the summer of 2019, I might be wrong, we realized like this is not really a scalable solution. And in order to scale up and do it properly, we'd go into the multifamily sector and actually work with investors, get some commercial loans, and do proper investments in that sense. And
you didn't want to move to Cleveland?
No, and even if I did, I think that it just wasn't as good of a market as what you have over here. Not to mention, I grew up here, spent my entire life here, and so know the area pretty well.
I'm a transplant. I'm from LA originally, but I was here for, you know, Northeastern. I was already here 3-4 years at that point. And whether the business made the choice.
Othering is a thing.
What's that?
What?
You know what othering is?
No.
You don't remember this from the mayoral race? When you say in a denigrating way that someone is not from Boston and that they're somehow less than because they're not born and bred here, that is called othering.
I did not realize there was a term for that.
Now you know. Sorry.
So I guess the question is
that a discriminatory
remark? It is. You should not other.
You shouldn't other people.
Yeah.
Don't other others.
Don't feel less than.
So then
you're just valuable.
I'll change what I said. Instead, I became a Bostonian when I moved here.
There you go.
Exactly.
You are one of us.
Sorry. So after I completely derailed your train of thought.
Jesus.
Let's see. Now that you've melded into
Boston.
So we're both here. We said we need to be able to, at the very least, if we have third-party management, be able to spot check, go through, you know, major CapEx projects, get to know the market where, you know, we build up the network here and know the intricacies, know the neighborhoods, know what each place is selling for, know all the comps. And if that's 1,000 miles away in Cleveland, that's not going to be the place that we can grow the business as efficiently. And why would an investor trust us if we say, hey, we go there 4 times a year. We don't really know what we're doing there, but we'll figure something out for you. That's not really the thesis that we want to be telling people.
And so to add to that, basically, we leveraged everybody we knew that was in the industry and would go up to them and ask, okay, give us some tips if we want to start out in this. And
honestly, even people we didn't know in the industry, the perks of being in your early 20s, saying, I'm going to do this crazy idea, start real estate. People give you the time of day, even if it's for a 10-minute call. It's, hey, what's going on? And people punching way above the weight of what you'd expect a 22-year-old be able to get coffee with or get lunch with have said, of course, we'll do this. Here's some advice. Here's some tips. Call me anytime.
That's a fascinating phenomenon, and it happens to be true.
Mm-hmm. We've had other guests that do that exact sort of thing.
There's a time in your life where that works. Like if you're, I hate to say this, but if you're 44 years old and you call, let's use Ted Dye for, I shouldn't use anyone specific, but you call someone who's very well established. I just think they're much more likely to take the coffee with a 22-year-old.
I agree. You kind of create that sense of chutzpah, right? Like you have, you know, you have drive, you want to learn. And I think that people kind of relate to that at that level in their lives.
And on top of that, you have the Northeastern thing. The great part is so many people in the industry went to Northeastern, and someone who sees a 20-year-old saying, I want to do this, it definitely helped. We had the Cleveland properties say, you know, maybe we're not doing something at a scale you're used to, but we did something. We're not just thinking of this as a hypothetical. Right. We're ready to pull the trigger when it works.
That's the difference.
Can you help
us?
Cool. And
you're also unencumbered. You know, you've got everything presumably laid out in front of you. Your time is your own for almost all 24 hours of the day, I assume.
Exactly.
So you can dive in
and before life gets more
complicated. When did you graduate?
Unless you have some unplanned pregnancies.
Yeah, which I didn't. So
when did you graduate?
So I graduated in 2020.
Okay.
And I did 2019. So when we bought our first property, going a little non-sequential in the order, it was actually January 2020. So you were in your last semester at Northeastern.
Paying very close attention to every class, you know. So
first property in Cleveland or first property here?
First property here.
Okay.
So I was a graduate. He was a student. It was a 16 unit. We raised about $1 million of third party money. That was...
Where was it?
It's in Lynn. We still have that building. And it was tough to raise that money. I mean, we're an unproven group of people. $1 million was a massive number, inconceivable at that point.
Yeah, to a 21-year-old, definitely.
When you put it under agreement, did you have any money committed? Like, had you had discussions with friends, family, any other outside third parties and say, hey, you know, if we come across a good deal, it meets your criteria, you ready to write us a check? Or did you just go in and say, we'll find a way?
We started with we'll find a way. Like, we've talked to people about the concept of investing in us, but before we put a deal on the table, I mean, we made the earnest money check a true joke. So something that he and I could both walk away from and just have a bad day.
It was $1,000.
Exactly. Wow. So
$1,000 offers. I love it.
$1,000 offer. And so after we put
that
in.
Yeah, but what was it at P&S?
That's what earnest money is in theory.
Massachusetts is that weird anomaly state where it's offer then P&S.
P&S we did offers put a financing contingency on.
Okay.
And
okay.
I mean, we figured there's got to be a way to pull it off. Worst case, we get closer to the table. We trust the property. We think we're getting it a good basis. We'll find someone to partner with. We'll bring someone else in.
So right off the bat, you went 16 units.
We looked at threes and it... First thing, threes are very expensive. Even in 2019, they were crazy expensive. I mean, by today's standards, they probably look cheap, but it was going to be tougher for us to get a residential loan than a commercial loan. So we said, we have to do 6+.
Right, because with the three, they can only count a certain percentage of the income, whereas with the 16-
Exactly, and we have one college student, one person fresh out of college.
Great file, you know? But the main thing that we pitched and the main thing that I think made us strong is that whatever we lacked in experience, we had people that have, you know, 10 times as much, if not more, in that specific field. So experienced property managers, experienced attorneys, experienced basically anyone that has done it before, investment managers. And so we had their advice to count on. And definitely we used that.
How'd you find the property?
This one, what was it, on market?
It was on market. It was sitting around for a while and we just threw a low ball in.
And they accepted it.
They accepted or countered within a couple percent of it.
Wow. And how did you break? Can you break down the numbers? Like, what did you raised $1 million? What were you offering your investors? Are you out talking?
And are they still participating or are they fully recapped out?
So all the investors are in it. We do add equity split at certain hurdles. So we have the waterfall, then first hurdle, then that deal had a second hurdle. And first, we do the return of equity. We haven't refinanced that deal yet, nor sold it yet. So every investor is in at the same ratio they bought in at.
Okay.
Nice.
Did you need any CapEx on that building?
Yes. Yeah. And it needed a fair amount of CapEx. So part of that money raised, we funded the CapEx out of cash, not out of the bank loan.
And you got a traditional commercial loan for that building?
Yeah. So traditional, we went with Fannie Mae, I believe, for that one. Small balance. In that case, and basically they underwrite the hell out of the building. So
yeah, I heard that process. We haven't done a Fannie Mae loan, but I heard the process is pretty.
You know, at times
intense.
The interest only makes it worth it. You have to see, I mean, what the delta is between the rates now and the community banks. But you could get, you know, if you do 10-year money on them, you could probably get 3 years of IO on a deal, which really is. It's something, and they're all 30-year AM. I've heard some people pushing them out to 35-year AM without getting too technical, that if you really want to get good cash flow first couple of years, Fannie and Freddie seem tough to beat from that aspect. They're just, it takes a while to get them across the finish line, and they're much more expensive on the fee side than a community bank.
And where did you go to secure that Fannie Mae loan? Like, is that a local bank? Is that... Did you call 1-800-FANNIE-MAE?
No, there's got to be a broker, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, exactly. So we went to a broker that we talked to a few. Once again, it's the hurdle of getting over two young guys doing this. And eventually, you know, one of them said, let's take them on. I guess they saw us having a high enough probability that they get the fees they put in the time.
Nice.
Yeah, that was that one.
Yeah, that was my question. So like Fannie was on the underwriting side. They were, you know, not to discount your experience, but like two young guys fresh out of school, like did they question that at all?
They asked a lot of questions of our property manager, and thankfully our property manager at that point had another Fannie or Freddie property under their belt.
Got it.
If that didn't happen, I don't know if it could have got to the finish line. There's a lot of things that just worked out. I mean, we closed on that deal January 30th, 2020. If we closed on it just a month later, I don't know if we could have closed on it. I mean, we're talking within
pre-COVID
within
nonsense.
2 weeks of owning the property, the market tanked, liquidity dried up, and you have these young guys. Are these the guys you're going to bat on? I don't know if we closed it just a couple weeks later if we could have gotten it done.
Nice.
How did it perform during COVID? Did it everything kind of
yeah. Did you buy it fully leased up?
Fully leased up. We bought it occupied, and the thing is, we actually
there was
have
one
any...
vacant unit, but we had that filled within 30 days, 60 days, something like that.
So I guess when COVID hit, we were fully occupied, and we didn't have, maybe with the exception of one unit, any delinquency issues. So that's people good. Paid, and that was refreshing for us because, well, we needed that to say yeah. the least.
So not to change gears, I drove by your site on our way to our studio here in South Boston. You guys are doing a larger condominium play for sale.
Yes. So we're building 32 units. I think this is the place where we're first publicly saying the name. It's called Vesta, V-E-S-T-A.
You heard it here.
Yep.
Is this your second? Is this, so you bought the 16 and this is the next deal?
I'll add a quick few in the middle. So we did right after the 16, just a few months later, we did another 16 in Beverly. And then
As a hold.
So existing 16. And then we did a portfolio of 56 units in Lynn. And that brings us right around to the point where this deal came around. So
we also picked up 10 units in Revere.
Yeah, forgot about that one.
Yeah.
But
just rounding error.
Yes.
10 units.
It was just enough to
What's
get out
10
of
units
bed, right?
Friends. Right? Yeah, yeah. Your low watermark is
hey, you know
up.
What? Applying for a loan is as painful on 10 as it is on 56.
So you hate the credit pulls on it. You get worried
just
about
don't like
that.
Credit pulls. I mean, I know.
Are they all are these all Fannie loans?
No, so
can you please mute that?
So it just so happens that
it makes me feel important, Ray.
Just so happens that we'll the three buildings all are Fannie or Freddie and Lynn, and the other two are community banks. It's just a matter of timing. The last one we did in August of 22, community bank, the rates were more attractive. For a while in COVID, they had the, I think they call it the interest reserve, where they take 6 months of interest upfront for Fannie or Freddie, and that's tough to make work. So then, you know, the calculus changes slightly where you say, let's go to a community bank. They're going to charge less. You don't get the interest only. Maybe you only get 25-year AM, but you're paying a lot less and you don't have to tie up $100,000, $200,000 of money just because it's a requirement.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. So you bought a bunch of, you know, cash flowing rental property, and then you decided let's do a large new construction project in the city of Boston.
Ground out. Permitted.
Yeah. Permitted.
Oh, you bought it. You bought it.
Permitted. It was actually demolished when we bought it. So
it's a hole in the ground.
Yeah. Basically.
Nice. So I mean, you bought the dirt.
We bought the dirt.
It's Vesta. The name is Vesta.
Vesta.
Have you started pre-sales yet?
We have not. Okay. So we're expecting completion sometime next year. We have a marketing team in place. We're talking about that strategy, but it's a little premature for that at this point.
How do you find the deal? Was it just offered?
It was off market. It was a seller didn't want too much news to get out. He owned the market. He permitted it. He pulled off a beautiful project and then decided it wasn't worth his risk at the time, being given what's going on in the economy. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want the word to get around too much.
Sorry, when did you buy it? When did you close?
We closed January 2023.
Didn't want the word to get around. Smart. The zoning process is going to let the word out, no?
Yeah. Well, he didn't want the neighbors to find out
that he sold it.
He's bringing it back, but he had a beloved grocery store in the area, and he knew people would be upset when they heard that left the project. But in fact, he's bringing it back. We talk to him all the time. I mean, I think he was more excited when the elevator shaft went up than we did, because he's been thinking of this project for 7 years at this point.
At least.
Wow. So, you know, it's something that we may have learned about mid-late last year, but
I think an interesting way to frame it is to go back to our episode we did with Jake and David Grossman. They were talking about something that they had permitted, approved, and then sold instead of developing. And I think it was Jake who said, for us to have gone forward with it would have been for us to kind of put a stake in the ground and say, this is worth as much to us as the market values it today. Would you pay that amount to do this deal? And if the answer to that is no, then you're making the right decision to sell it.
Yep. So how was the transition from buying existing buy and hold properties that needed maybe some cosmetic rehab to a ground up?
This all goes back to have a good team around you.
Yeah.
And so luckily for us, I mean, the seller did a phenomenal job of putting together architects, a GC, just a whole...
Oh, he had everybody lined up.
Yeah, he had everybody lined up.
Well, the deal is permanent. It's not just zoning approved. So there's a fairly well-baked set of plans.
Plans, but like not necessarily a GC involved.
No, yeah.
So it was very well along in the process that way. And, you know, we did our own due diligence, vetted everyone and said, same with that thing of, if you bought the building today, would you buy the building today at this price? It was the same thing. Would we hire this person if they weren't hired yet on the project? And every single one of them, both Nitsan and I, said, yes, these are people we would keep. They're people we would trust. And really just the transition time from the day we closed. I mean, they were working the week before we closed. We put a, without going too much in the details, we made sure that the project didn't stall out, didn't stop in the post-purchase and sale part of the process. So when we took over it, there was momentum and we didn't lose, you know, 3 weeks, 5 weeks to mobilize.
So he had actually pulled the permit and started work, and then you bought, and then like he demoed the building and then he was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yes, exactly. But then he says, I have the market. I want to bring the market back. So I'm keeping the ground floor commercial. I want to live in the building.
So you gave him
such a risky, yeah, dumb move as a seller. Like I've seen, I'm going to demo the building. Maybe I'll start site work or something. And then I'll say, well, it's like you were opening such a can of worms
in liability.
So many ways. And liability. It's like, if you're going to sell it, just stop and sell it. Don't.
Which honestly, I think helped us as buyers that the few other people that looked at it probably saw it and said, this is a lot of headache. You're not buying a piece of land. You're buying a team. You're buying a project.
Well, yeah. Like if we're looking at a project, like we want to bring in our guys, mm-hmm, like we're not, like I want full control. I don't want to bring in guys that have already been contracted by someone else that, like, again, that, you know, I know you did your due diligence, but it's just,
and we had to hand over every contract and make sure everything's in our name. And it's almost as if you start fresh, but
yeah, check out the handshake agreement. Say if you had anything handshake, we got to start new with this. Luckily, there wasn't too much complicated stuff, given at that point the building had been knocked over and they started digging. So at least we weren't too much further along.
So where are you now in the build process?
So right now we already have our garage slab in, elevator shaft is up, and we're basically any day now going to start forming the concrete foundation walls.
Nice. How often are you on site?
Every single day. Every single day. And luckily for us, we're about a 10-minute walk away from the site.
I have to say, it's a lot better now that we're in the summer season to be able to walk over to it because we don't have an excuse to drive. It gets us our steps in every day.
There you go. Nice.
I will say you're still in the honeymoon stage, not to scare you at all, but
for sure.
It's always nice and fun. And then the elevator company shows up and says that the shaft was too wide, not wide enough. The sills are at the wrong elevation.
Or they give you like change order for winter conditions. Like
we had a wonderful winter. Yeah.
You guys sound like me now. What the hell did I do?
I know.
So I'm rubbing off on you the wrong way.
You're too young to be as cynical as I am.
Yeah.
No. You guys will be fine. So you're getting your foundations in and
so slated for completion when? Yeah.
So I want to say mid next year, a little bit later than that.
Okay. So the end of next year.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mark is on a roll.
Well, right. we know how the business works.
You hired broker already, all that stuff.
Yeah,
is
so we have a great, great sales team, and they've done things in the area, and we have a lot of confidence in them.
It's great.
Very hands-on. I mean, they're helping us pick cabinet colors, floor colors. I mean, I say above our pay grade. I mean, we could figure it out. But
so finishes, you haven't dialed in all that stuff yet?
We've dialed in 95% of them.
There's just some codependencies, say floor color, cabinet color, vanity color, tile in the rooms that maybe we'll have to swap out some choices if the colors clash, but we're pretty much all there.
Is there parking?
Yeah. So there's underground parking, which is very nice, especially for the for sale product.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when this is a big smashing hit and they're all sold out between mid and end of next year, what's the next step, you think?
The next step is to breathe a breath of fresh air. No, I'm kidding. We're always on the lookout for deals, both existing.
I thought you were going to Zanzibar.
Well, actually, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
We have to figure it out.
Or
still,
I can sell you an island. You
know? Yeah, but sell me an island. I'll buy an island.
The business model isn't for sale product, right? Like you guys are primarily buy and hold investors, or this is something that you want to continue to expand on?
I think it's a two-way street. It's finding whatever deals make sense. I mean, our capital, our limited partners are flexible, whether it's development or existing.
Yeah.
We know the area. And in some ways, building a building is, you know, the same understanding of what's it going to stabilize to. And that's no different than buying a multifamily. So it does take a certain level of risk getting to that point. But from a long-term perspective, once you get through those 2 years, 3 years of pain, at the end of the day, you have an asset that you either choose to sell because you think it values more than it makes sense to hold it.
So you've scaled pretty quickly. So how, you know, you said that first million was really difficult to raise. How have you subsequently raised capital for the you know, because you went pretty quick, right?
Like 2020,
3 years, and you've bought a lot
56,
of units.
10.
And I assume the 30-something unit building you're building in Southie is not an inexpensive build. So.
Not at all.
So, well, they cashed out of the Ohio stuff.
Right, of course. Yeah.
So that's all $40,000.
There's the seed money right there.
But no, so our group of investors that had faith in us the first time, they've stuck around with us. The circles have expanded, and we've been working with them, and there have been some other new ones that came on board. And
what about family offices?
You guys we have a couple of those. Yep.
How is it going in the door at a family office? How do you even get in the door at a family office?
It's relationships.
Yeah.
Two-way street of once you get in the door, staying in the door is understanding what these people's goals are and where you fall in their capital stack without sounding too CFA, that do they want a predictable deal? Do they have a certain allocation for what? And it's, once again, going back to being young, these family offices like to see next gen, even if they're what we call relationship checks. Let's say they're used to writing a $5 million check, $3 million check. If they write us a, you know, mid six figure check, that's them saying, we want to follow you as you grow. Maybe in 10 years, we're going to be writing you, maybe in 3 years, they're going to be writing serious checks of serious size. It's really their business development. And I think our ages work to an advantage there too.
Your age works to an advantage in a lot of ways early in your career. Also, a lot of grace from the building department. You'd go in there and like, you're just kind of like a puppy. It's like, what am I supposed to do?
Even in this city.
Yeah. Even in the city, I'll say that.
Wow. Yeah. I could see.
In relative terms.
You playing that like, I have no fucking clue what I'm doing.
Yeah,
card.
Hey,
like,
well, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I had to fill that out. Let me do that for you. No big deal.
The one thing is that they're certain of is we have no retirement plans anytime soon.
Yeah.
So
going back, so you literally just cold called family offices or did you have relationships?
Relationships. Okay. And actually not from us before the business, but they're, once again, an existing investor will go, hey, I've heard of this person or someone I know knows this person.
Any like family off, like Sergey, like...
no one cool. I shouldn't say that. They're very cool people. They're amazing people, but
it's not like Elon Musk's like family.
Oh no, we're in talks with Elon Musk. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But no, they're the kinds of people that very local presence, I will say at this point.
Nice. That's cool. Do you have management in-house on all of your rental properties or are you doing it yourself?
So
third
party management for all of them.
Okay. Same management company for all of them?
Yes, as of now. We're pretty much only on the North Shore for rentals.
Yeah.
If we expanded out of their geography, that'd be a different question. But, you know, we're very hands-on with them. If they're hearing this or in general, I'm sure we drive you crazy with all of our calls, our emails and this, but...
But the thing is, we can both pretty much, you know, give us a unit number and we know what's going on with it. So any one of our units, we're very in touch with it.
What's like an interesting maintenance challenge that you guys have run across? Like the phone rings, It's 11 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning.
So I don't know if this is interesting, but I think it really showed us how the business works.
You called me with like a crazy one once.
Oh, it was the plumbing issue in that building.
Quite a mystery.
So we figured it out, or knock on wood, we're figuring it out.
Back it up for
that building,
Dan and Ray.
Doesn't have a basement. It has a concrete subfloor where all the ancient plumbing is buried
in. Like a crawl space?
No, it's solid. It's like 2 feet of concrete with gravel below it. So the only way to get the plumbing there is to cut into it or bypass it. And we've decided to bypass it. It would just be too much otherwise.
I think we have to start that one again.
What? Can you just
cut
yeah.
that question?
I don't even understand.
Let me start
why,
that question.
Yeah, let's.
I jumped out. I fucked that up. Time.
All right,
back in. All right, so give us an example of time of phones. The phone's ringing. It's been 2 o'clock in the morning. It's a unique challenge as a landlord. And you got to figure it out.
So two examples of this. First one wasn't really a unique example or something funny, but we closed on our first property January 30th. That night, we get a call from the team that said, hey, this guy's trying to reach you. He was the old maintenance tech. He said that the power went off in one of the units. I think at that point, we'd closed on the building. The deed been, you know, in the registry for 3 hours at that point. And we're doing our victory lap. I don't remember why we were in the car somewhere. We're getting back from the dinner for closing, and you get the phone call and went, okay, this is 3 hours of ownership and we already have this phone call with a problem.
This is real.
And a minor problem too. Like circuit breaker was a solution. Just pop it back up. But
oh, there you go.
I find being a landlord isn't as bad. I think there's a story that people like, a narrative that people like to put out there, and they like to make it seem a little more daunting or challenging than it.
I think it depends on how you are as a landlord. I think if you do a good job and have good due diligence on your tenants, and you're not just putting any schmuck on the street in your building that could cause massive problems, there's a degree of oversight there.
I think it's an interesting conversation though, because one, no matter how much diligence you do on your tenant, like, yes, you can increase your odds, but you never really are 100%.
Yeah, what if they're like a star tenant and then just 1 weekend they're like, you know what, I'm going to have a party. And then the party turns into,
going into specifics, things like that have happened. It's
people lose their jobs too. But putting that all aside, I really meant more so the maintenance.
Oh, maintenance.
And
I agree with you.
Part of that is selective.
I think it's like you learn how a house works by
some of these,
finding the most common issues and what the resolution is. And
as long as there's a little margin in the deal, like just call a plumber, call an HVAC repair shop, like whatever it wants to be. You don't need to necessarily know how to fix a roof. If someone calls and says there's water coming in my bedroom and you know it's a rubber roof, you know?
Yeah, the one thing you need to make sure you know, though, is if a plumber tells you in a panicked frenzy, oh, we need to replace the entire building's piping. Mm-hmm. Second guess that. Make sure that that's actually the case. It's not a leaking toilet. So,
but like, I think where it gets stressful is when there's no margin. When it's like that call comes and you're like, well, I guess I got to go get a 40-foot ladder and climb to the top of the roof. Like,
or when you barely have a cushion and they're saying, oh, now you need a new roof replacement. Yeah. And now here's $20,000. Yeah. Like,
I'll tell you, one of the biggest pains though is just how delayed everything is. So, for example, we have a building where the water bill is just astronomical. And we're trying to figure out what's going on here. How is it possible that these few units are using this much water? And so we start checking all the interior plumbing, toilets, make sure nothing's running, sinks, low flow adjustments. And you have to wait a month till the new bill comes in. That's your point of reference.
I mean, at one point we sat outside
the
water
meter. Can I
guess
what it was?
Go ahead.
Leaky toilet? Toilet that was just running.
He just said check leaky toilet.
We checked, and the month later the bill goes up even higher. So we're like, it's not the toilet. So that's when you start realizing, okay, you have a plumbing issue.
And it's after the meter. That's the other thing.
Here's my guess. I'll guess it's that sketchy building with all of your stuff under the slab and just have a leak coming off the main.
Oh, exactly. Yep. That's what happens when you bury a brass pipe in a slab of concrete. And I don't even remember what decade, but before us.
Shot in the dark there.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Amazing guess. That was the cause of it. And so basically you have two choices. Basically surgery in every inch of the building and try to repair old brass that if you bend it the wrong way, it'll crack and you have to start from scratch, or just bypass it. So not a doctor, but I looked at a medical analogy and I figured, okay, just let's do a bypass here. And That's an interesting one, but again,
so this for our listeners, that was take two of the first explanation of it, and I was like, because I didn't really follow the first one, but
and for reference too, we called Mark on the first go around and said, you know, in due diligence, is this? I think the question I asked you is this going to be $1,000 problem, $10,000 problem, or $100,000 problem? And you said, well, it's not going to be $100,000 problem.
Yeah,
you were right.
Yeah,
Mark said, so go to Home Depot, go rent a jackhammer, go do it yourself. You know?
They don't allow you to view your daily usage of your
you know, it's funny,
online.
You know where they do let you do that? In Cleveland, Ohio. You have hourly
in
readings.
Boston.
I'll give you an interesting one. A buddy of mine, his house is connected. He had a backup, right? And he hired our friend Chris to go out and fix it. And it turns out that he's not connected to city sewer. He's on what's called a cesspool. He's got a cesspool.
Okay. Oh, those are
like a septic system.
Yeah.
Actual cesspool.
But he's been paying water and sewer to Boston Water and Sewer for years and years and years. And he didn't even take it. He called over and they ended up writing him like a decent sized check just based on like, guys, you've been billing me for a service that like absolutely not providing.
Right.
You have a
water charge and the sewer charge.
Yeah.
And at one of my properties.
And if you don't.
We actually got like a deduct meter for our irrigation because you don't want to pay the sewer charge on that. And that had a good ROI on it. But crazy. Any other? You mentioned leaks, Mark, but it's like, it's not necessarily the roof. Could be like
siding,
could be
a
window.
This was a young, young in my, when I was earlier in my career, basement was flooded in South Boston in a building that I never had water in. And the tenants were absolutely positive that it was groundwater. It was like I had basement waterproofers coming through. We're like kind of beside us. And after a little bit of inspection and thought, we figured out there's a water main with a leak outside the building.
Oh, it was getting in.
Yeah. And water and sewer came out that night. Like they figured it out. They fixed it. And the water receded.
What's the most common maintenance complaint that you get?
Oh, appliances. Far and away appliances, especially washer dryers. Dryers.
Really?
Okay. Yes. Interesting.
You?
What do you got?
I think for us, it's fridges. Fridges and what about
like, I know the seals breaking? Say. Oh, you know what I'm going to say.
It's mainly the engine broke or the motor in it. It just stopped working, stopped cooling things. And
a lot of lights out where there's something that's gone wrong that's a very easy fix that takes a long time to figure it out.
Cross wires.
Us is garbage disposals.
Well, that's quickly going down because I just rip them out every time they break.
Ray's very adamant about not providing garbage disposals to tenants.
What about dishwashers?
They've been okay.
Oh, yeah. We always put dishwashers in. I think garbage disposals.
Oh, providing dishwashers?
So no garbage disposals.
Yeah, I don't think we've had any dishwasher related maintenance issues.
For reference, we're going to have all these features in the condo project. So
I would hope so.
To be fair, on the garbage disposal item that Dan and I like to go back and forth on, we are going to put them in our new rental building. But I said, I will absolutely throw extra money at that and give us like, you know, the gold standard
one
of the garbage disposal.
Yeah. One seven horse. Horsepowers.
Yeah.
Seven.
Give me all the horses. Yeah.
It's actually diesel powered.
you have an external natural generator. Gas. Right.
Well, I mean, the problem is some tenants don't understand that A, you have to run it with water on, or B, you can't put chicken bones down it or any other garbage or metal or whatever that happens to fall in there. And so they naturally break and it's frustrating.
My take on the garbage disposal is I think it depends on the building and it depends on the location, it depends on the class of the building. If I have a C class.
Are these like elitist?
If I have a class. No, but if you have a class C building in a not so great area, maybe you don't put garbage disposals in. But if you're.
Then you're just going to end up with chicken bones in like your P trap in your
cinema. Oh, that was going to be my question. You see a lot higher rate of clogs.
I have no clogs. I have zero clogs. I had one tenant kind of cleaning
things
up. I think
we're going down a weird rabbit
where they dumped like.
No, but what I'm saying is like if you're building a luxury new rental building that you're trying to get top of the market rents on, you're not going to put garbage disposals.
I'll say this too. Like
that's why I conceded.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You want to attract a certain tenant too. Like I put nicer appliances in my most recent rental. And like, and to some degree, like people who rent that will take care of those appliances. You're going to attract.
I agree.
Anyway, this has been an excellent episode. We've really enjoyed having you guys on.
Thank you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Continue all the success. I wish you guys luck.
Thank you.
If anyone wants to get a hold of you, how do they reach out?
Invest. Buy one of your condos.
LinkedIn's probably the best way. I don't know if you guys put the link in it, but you could see our names from the title of it. So shoot us a message on LinkedIn.
Zanzibar Capital.
And Neeson's personal LinkedIn too.
Yep.
Perfect. Boom. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, rating, subscribing. Catch you on the next one.
Cheers.
Bye.